The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
The Football Friday with the Boss.
I bounce that like a boss.
In the gloss. Check out my lip gloss,
I only rock clear. On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Blue Emu and Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. You are listening to the Boss in the Gloss. And Carla, this was a little uncomfortable after that first hour when you were giving Ron Culver therapy about being a Chargers fan. He walked down the hall.
I can relate.
Yeah, there was a model in the conference room, and she was naked. And Ron said he had a strange desire for sushi. And I don't know why you did that, Ron, but he went down the hall.
You're morning looking. Sushi.
Yeah, he had,
it often happens.
He likes to eat sushi off of naked models. Is that right, Ron?
That is a demented Chargers fan that we can't say anything more.
Well, I thought your therapy would have fixed him.
I'm just emulating my favorite UNLV quarterback. That's all.
Well, as people
only
probably
in Vegas.
Know, Max
only
Gilliam, yes,
Vegas.
He was on a reality TV show. He ate sushi off a nude model, and he's been forced to apologize. I mean, isn't that an inalienable right of every American young boy to eat sushi off a nude model?
Especially if you're a quarterback.
Especially if you're the quarterback.
Especially in Vegas. And you know what? They're not following the what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Noted. They violated one of the primary tenets here.
I know this.
Of course, it went out on television. So,
well, there's that.
Most of the time, yeah, that's not a good place to keep your secret.
No.
Crazy times. And that was a big dust up this week. One of the big headlines that was a little off the field, but certainly entertaining to many.
Well, we have to give Ron a hall pass. Desperate times call for desperate measures. And if you're a Chargers fan in this season, you know,
Ron,
sushi it is.
And if that's the only way they're serving sushi, what's a man to do?
What is a guy to do? I mean, really.
So, Ron, now you've gotten clearance from your therapist that this is okay to go forward.
Hey.
Yeah, I'm only halfway there.
Very good. All right, when we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit about some college football topics. Ohio State University got a nice hall pass from the Big Ten, and they are really poised to be in the CFP. There are some big matchups coming down the stretch. And then our beloved Texas A&M Aggies here in the Texas area knocking on the door, wanting to be part of the CFP. Is there a way they can get in?
Who are the winners? Who are the losers? Oh, boy.
We will unpack that when we return. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Football Friday with the Boss.
In the Gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Blue Emu and Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
So at this point in the college football season, I feel like it should be, and down the stretch they come, that we're going to be entering this stretch here where we can get real clarity on all the teams. But boy, with all the COVID cancellations, it has been a strange season. Hard to really define who the elite four teams are for the CFP.
They don't seem to have a hard time.
Well, the Big Ten is certainly making it look like Ohio State has a clear path in.
Well, there have been over 100 games this season canceled or postponed due to COVID.
Yeah, miserable.
That is not a small thing to deal with. That's
right.
Really tough.
And A&M and Ole Miss canceled this week, and A&M is certainly in the hunt for the CFP. Ohio State.
And Michigan canceled. First time 102-year rivalry. The game.
Crazy.
Been canceled.
Hate to see that.
And you know, I think I've heard your conspiracy theory. I think you need to share it with our listeners.
Well, there is
You're not wrong.
That view of conspiracy guy, right? Whatever happens, he can attribute a conspiracy to it. And here comes Michigan, Jim Harbaugh. They're a nice football team. They are every year. Yet they struggle to beat Ohio State.
Which is the reason he was hired. You're hired for Michigan to beat Ohio State.
Right.
And in his first 4 years, he's 0-4. This would have been year five.
And he would have been 0-5. I mean, Ohio State looks like they've got the better team this year. And so he would have gone 0-5. So better yet, just not play. Look, conspiracy guy comes out and he finds a reason for COVID to take place in Michigan this week. Conspiracy guy says, well, we're going to get to a place where you're Alabama and you've got to face a tough Florida team in the conference championship. You've got nothing to gain by playing that game. So, conspiracy guy says,
you see more cancellations coming into conference championship weekend.
Alabama has a bad case of COVID. Can't play Florida. Doesn't matter. They'll go on into the CFP.
Notre Dame should say the same then.
Notre Dame should say the same because they are headed to the CFP if they don't have to play Clemson. If they play Clemson, I think Clemson's going to knock them down. I think Clemson's going to come in with an attitude. You beat us earlier in the year, but you beat us shorthanded, and Clemson's too good of a team to lose twice to Notre Dame. I think Clemson wins big. It would be a good week, conspiracy guy says, for Notre Dame to get COVID. And then they don't play. And then Notre Dame's in the CFP. And you know what? Lastly, conspiracy guy needs to remind everybody that there are huge dollars at stake. Follow the money trail. To be one of the four CFP teams is a big, big payday to the teams in the CFP. So, yes, there's a case to be made that there are some games worthy of being missed.
Do you think that money matters to college football?
Oh,
do you think
never.
It's all about the traditions?
Never, never, never. I mean, look at the Big Ten. Certainly part of the motivation to position Ohio State as an undefeated team and eligible to go to the CFP, eligible to be the conference champion.
To be represented.
To be represented. The Big Ten wants in that Final Four, and Ohio State looks like they'll get there.
You know, it's interesting you bring up the Big Ten. I think that, to me, that is the one Power Five conference that has really bumbled its way through the entire season. You know, they canceled their season in August, but they were the first ones, and they didn't really need to do that. And then they, you know, long before that decision was necessary, then they opted back in pretty late into the season when the SEC and ACC were already going. So then it was going to be a shortened season. And then they had the 6-game minimum. And then, of course, when they see, oh, dang, Ohio State's going to have 3 games canceled with Maryland. Who is the other one? I can't remember. And now Michigan this weekend.
Yep.
They're not going to make the 6-game minimum.
Yep.
So let's meet and make sure. Oh, look, minimum waived. Look at that. So, you know, it's, I understand if I'm a Big Ten commissioner or an athletic director, I'm like, yeah, I want my conference represented. If I'm Indiana, I'm like, what the heck? You just ruined our chance to play. We had enough games. We were going to be the rep to play in the Big Ten Conference Championship against Northwestern. And I'll tell you what, the job that Tom Allen has done with that team this year, even losing, the only loss was to Ohio State, at Ohio State, losing Michael Penix Jr., their star quarterback, to an ACL injury. If I'm Indiana, I've got smoke coming out of both ears. I'm needing my own therapy.
Yep.
Because they got messed around by the Big Ten. Because
yep.
The Big Ten saying, I don't care. We got to do what we have to have Ohio State in there. But instead, Indiana, the coach and the AD tweeted out, which they don't need to do. I mean, it is what it is. That, hey, basically, we can control what we can control. We did our best product on the field. We did lose to Ohio State in a close game. And, hey, we're going to look at it like the Big Ten is going to be represented, and let's move on. I mean, class personified right there. But if I'm Alabama, Notre Dame, and Clemson right now, I'm going, whoa, 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 whoa. We've played twice as many games as Ohio State.
Yep.
Like, they got some fresh legs. 5 games versus 9, 10, 11 games. I know it can't be avoided in this era, but I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
It is one of the bad footnotes of this season.
Sure.
And Indiana has had a great year, an historically good year for them. Really been fun to watch what's happened with that program. But they will have to come back and chase that big title, Big Ten title next year. I mean, that's just where they land. You're right. They handled it with class.
They did. And it's, I can't say that I would have done the same, but I'm impressed. It's tough, though, because you look at, to me, the team that has everything to lose is Clemson. Because if Alabama loses in the conference championship, they've been number one, they're going to stay. If Notre Dame loses to Clemson, they just have one loss. They'll stay, and the committee loves Notre Dame. If Clemson loses, they are a two-loss team, and they are gone. I mean, this is a rare chance for the Tigers to avenge their only loss of the season. When do you get that chance, you know, in the same year?
Well, I agree with you that Clemson has a lot at stake. Yeah. Clemson has to win.
They do.
They're not going to be a two-loss team in the CFP. I think if Notre Dame loses, they're going to fall out. I understand the Notre Dame bias, yeah. But I think that a loss by Notre Dame and a barely win by Notre Dame over Clemson is going to really raise questions about whether Notre Dame stays in the top four. And I still go back to late season losses. Conference championship losses are tougher losses than a week one loss.
Sure.
And when you look at A&M in that case, A&M has one loss. They lost early. It was to Alabama, of all things. They have a great win.
And they play in the SEC West.
They have a great win over Florida.
That's crazy.
Which that win over Florida is a big-time quality win.
Because Florida sits right underneath them at six.
And the win over Florida that A&M had strikes me as same level quality, if not better, than Notre Dame's win over a very beat-up Clemson team.
With no Trevor Lawrence and most of their starting front seven gone? Yeah, it was biggie.
So that's the opportunity for A&M, really. Notre Dame loses. I think it's a real question mark whether they deserve to be in that Final Four. Some of it may well depend upon how close that game is. If it's another overtime game and Clemson wins in overtime, then, yeah, both ACC teams, Notre Dame and Clemson, might get in there. But if Clemson comes, and I just have this instinct that Clemson is going to come with their full fury. And
guns blazing.
They're going to come guns blazing, and they are going to win by two or three touchdowns. And I think that might be the end of Notre Dame's season.
Well, that surely would be interesting, because it just seems to me that I agree with everything that you're saying. The only thing I would say is that the narrative coming out of the CFP when Notre Dame beat Clemson in overtime without their star quarterback, with a true freshman, without half of their defensive line and players dropping like flies, that was never mentioned. Woo, that was a close one. Notre Dame escaped. It was Clemson, falls to Notre Dame. Notre Dame finally gets their top 25 win. Notre Dame, Notre Dame, Notre Dame. So the narrative was very much built around Notre Dame hype with no consideration for any of the ongoing circumstances.
Yep.
So if I'm A&M, I'm a little bit worried about that. And let's also look at the fact that Notre Dame plays in the ACC, which, other than Clemson, not a particularly tough conference. Getting better football-wise with the upcomings of Kentucky and UNC under Mac Brown and this and that. But it is not the SEC West.
Nope.
So let's be real about that. So if I'm A&M, I am working to get that narrative changed.
Well, the one thing I will say is, if you were on the CFP committee, you do like this current foursome. And look at the quarterbacks of this foursome.
Oh, my.
I mean, we're talking about
goodness.
Heisman Trophy type quarterbacks. I mean, now the love is all about Mac Jones, certainly Trevor Lawrence, a college pedigree like no other. Justin Fields, Ian Book, that foursome, the quarterback play would be a really great collection and a great way to finish a really tough year.
And I think with A&M, they're led by Kellen Mond. He is up and down. I like Kellen Mond, but he has been their four-year starter, which for A&M, that has been a coaching carousel. They couldn't decide on, they switched coaches as off, quarterbacks as much as you change your underwear in a season. It's been impressive what Jimbo Fisher has done in keeping it steady with Kellen Mond. But you go down to Florida, one spot behind A&M, and wow, Kyle Trask is right up there as well with that group. It's a stout group of guys under center. Wow.
All right, when we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with Alex Sparth. He covers the Patriots for 98.5, the Sports Hub in Boston. And we're going to ask him about the Patriots' loss last night and the fate of Cam Newton. All that when we return here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to Football Friday with the Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Blue Emu and Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right, joining us now on the Progressive Insurance guest line. By the way, drivers who go with Progressive save over $750 on average. And on our Progressive Insurance guest line is Alex Barth. He covers the Patriots for 98.5, the Sports Hub in Boston. Alex, thanks so much for joining us. You're on with David and Carla.
How's it going, guys?
Well, we are doing great, and we watched closely the Patriots game last night and have to ask, I mean, what about the quarterback situation? Who's going to be the quarterback next year, and is it time to give Jared Stidham a good long look?
Yeah, so I'll start with this year. I would think it's time for Stidham. Belichick has been steadfast. He was adamant last night. He was adamant again this morning that there will not be a change. He made a weird comment about Jared Stidham, kind of saying that his performance isn't the point right now. I actually wrote about that on 98.5thesportshub.com. But it seems like it's Cam's job at least for one more week. As for next year, I don't think the guy's currently on the roster. I think that Newton has shown that, well, he's been everything you want in a quarterback off the field in terms of his leadership and his accountability. He's been inconsistent. He's been indecisive under center, and the turnovers just aren't sustainable. And the matter of the fact is, despite all of that, Jared Stidham apparently hasn't shown the coaching staff enough that he can supplant Newton. So it's hard to feel confident about either guy going into 2021.
Yeah, and Alex, I mean, Jared Stidham lost, didn't even beat Brian Hoyer out for the start earlier this year. Did the Pats give Cam enough for him to succeed? Is part of that on the pieces or the lack of pieces around him?
So the help certainly isn't great. I don't know that they have a true number one wide receiver. They've gotten almost nothing out of the tight ends this year, but there's been numerous times where it's gone beyond that, right? The pick six last night, that's a pretty simple. The running back gets held up on the screen. You see quarterbacks regularly just throw that ball into the ground. There was a stat that was the first pick six on a design screen since 2010. So he certainly has been helped by those who are around him, but he's made decisions just alone, regardless of who he's throwing the ball to, that have been questionable.
We're talking to Alex Barth. You can read him on the Sports Hub in Boston. Want to ask you about N'Keal Harry. Patriots used a first-round draft pick on him a couple years ago. He had some catches last night, but is there a lot of disappointment about his trajectory in the NFL?
I think so. What made last night's game interesting is that it feels like a big part of N'Keal Harry's issue has been that the coaching staff hasn't put him in a spot to play to his strengths. He's a contested catch receiver. He's a big guy, and they kind of tried to use him in a finesse role, and you can tell he's struggling with it. But like you mentioned last night, they give him the opportunity to go up for that jump ball, and he's able to make the play. And then he's able to get down the field later on using his size and leverage, and probably should have drawn a holding call. There ended up being no flag on the play. But last night was certainly encouraging, but everybody saw the wide receiver graphic they put up. All the wide receivers the Patriots have taken since 2010, and there really wasn't a household name, even a borderline household name, above the bunch. And, you know, if the history was different, I don't know that N'Keal Harry would be looked on with as much doubt in New England.
Yep.
But I think he's kind of seen, it's not so much about him, and he's seen as another one in a line of receivers the team has drafted, Aaron Dobson, Chad Jackson, guys like that, who just never figured it out at the NFL level.
Well, there's some good receivers coming up in this draft, Devontae Smith, et cetera. But love to ask you, I mean, the Patriots will be drafting higher than they have in a very, very long time. At what position do they draft? What position should they – are they going to go get a quarterback, a wide receiver? Where do you see them drafting?
If they think the quarterback is there, if they think the guy is in this draft, whether it's Trey Lance, Kyle Trask, Mac Jones, I don't think they have a shot at Fields. I don't think – obviously they have a shot at Lawrence. But if they feel like the guy is there, I think they should take the quarterback. If not – I don't think you take a quarterback just for the sake of taking a quarterback. I think teams have done that, and it's set them back. You look at a team like the Chicago Bears. So I look at, you know, they need help in terms of the passing game. I'd love to see him take Kyle Pitts. If he's on the board, the tight end out of Florida, I think he's outstanding. I think they could really use linebacker help as well. Not having Dont'a Hightower this year has hurt them. There's been some whispers that Hightower could potentially not return from his opt-out and just retire, and that would be a huge loss. So potentially a linebacker, a safety as well. Devin McCourty's a key guy who is on the back half, more in the back half of his career, probably one or two years left, if that, in the league. So I think a safety could be a good get for them as well. And they're going to have some shuffling on the offensive line. So it's as weird as it is to see them picking so high, like you mentioned, the weirder thing is that you normally have it down to, okay, there's one of two or three positions they need in the first round. It's kind of an open book. And outside of running back, I don't know that anybody they take in the first round, people are going to look at it and say, oh, they really need that guy.
We're talking to Alex Barth, and he is a guru on all things Patriots and sports in Boston. Okay, Alex, we are sitting here in Houston, Texas, and we read the article in Sports Illustrated yesterday about Jack Easterby. He's the interim GM of the Texans, as you know. And Easterby was with the Patriots for a long time. Apparently, Belichick really valued his participation on the team. Here's the rub. When I read that article in Sports Illustrated, it's so intriguing. There's one part of it that makes you think Jack Easterby is this inspirational, faithful, great friend to team players and helps them, counsels them, supports them, builds them up for players. The other is he's a Machiavellian, power-hungry guy who is manipulated away to become the interim general manager without any real football credentials. You had him up there in Boston with the Patriots for a long time. What can you tell us about Jack Easterby?
Honestly, not a ton that wasn't in the article. I mean, all we ever really heard about him was just he was this guy that he's kind of a confidant for the players. He was the guy the players could turn to when they had something going on that wasn't something they were comfortable bringing to the coaching staff, whether it was personal or whatever, and that he was the guy that would just kind of listen to them. That's all we ever really heard. I mean, the players raved about him, but it was just that he's a guy who has our ear. That's it. The whole thing about, you know, wanting to become a GM and all that, I think that's as surprising to everybody here as it is those in Houston. There was never any whisper about that. Maybe it's the difference in the dynamic, and he just knew that he would never have a shot at that under Belichick, and then he goes to another organization, and he's not behind the greatest coach of all time, and he figures maybe he has more of an opportunity. But it really feels like when he left New England, he completely turned.
Wait, something
because you, again,
go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, so
the players just raved about him, and then you go and you read the players in New England just raved about him. Never heard a bad thing about him. All the players seem sincere when talking about him. They bring him up without being asked, and then he gets to Houston, and it seems to be the players he has the biggest issue with. So it really came as a genuine surprise to me to read that article.
What about Nick Caserio? There was a little window when he might come to Houston. Is he on a short list to be a general manager across the league now?
I would imagine so. You know, he helped build three Super Bowl teams. He has built, but he's been in Bill Belichick's ear for a while. Those guys generally are highly regarded. The issue last time was with his contract, and there was a clause in there that he wasn't allowed to negotiate. Some people questioned that at the time, but that is the reality of it, whether it's moral or not. So I would imagine he'll have his chance. Would he leave? You know, people have speculated Houston as a landing spot, but is he going to go to a team that already has the quarterback in place, that is missing a significant number of draft picks? It feels like if he's going to go and try for first time to be a GM, he's going to want to go to a team that he can really mold and he can put his fingerprints all over. And I just don't know that the Texans are at a point right now where that's possible.
Alex, we're talking about some questionable relationships and people here. So that brings up the unlikely friendship and roommate situation between Tom Brady and Antonio Brown, not only when he was in New England, but apparently in Tampa Bay as well. Can you shed some light on that? They just seem, well, polar opposites might be an understatement. What's going on there?
And unfortunately, you've only got about 20 seconds to answer that great question.
Sure. Tom Brady wants to win. That's all he cares about in life. That's his sole focus. Antonio Brown helps him win. So whatever he can do to have Antonio Brown around to help him win, he's going to do that.
Well, there you have it.
Thanks so much, Alex. Great to have you. Really appreciate it. Come back and hear us. Come join us again.
Thanks for having me.
Football Friday with the Boss
and the Gloss
on the SportsMap Radio Network,
presented by Blue Emu and Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Well, that was a great chance to speak to somebody who really knows the Boston landscape well. And I think his overriding point that I take away is that the quarterback for the Patriots next year is not currently on the roster. If they had confidence in Jared Stidham, they would be playing him now, or they would give him a shot right now. And it's clear, Belichick has made clear, he's starting Cam Newton next week. And that's certainly an indicator that he didn't believe Stidham is ready to play.
That's right. No, absolutely. And in a draft where there are so many good quarterbacks, I think the Patriots are going to, unfortunately, for their record, be in a position to grab a good one. So take it.
Well, there'll be a lot of change in New England next year when you consider they'll have a different quarterback. Josh McDaniels probably moves on. There are whispers that he would be on the short list for the Chargers.
Yes, I think so.
And so our beloved Ron there, I don't know how he'll feel about Josh McDaniels as the head coach, but he'd probably be very good with Justin Herbert. I could see a fit there. That's probably the biggest destination I hear about him. I mean, there are other teams trying to line up in different places. Here in Houston, Deshaun Watson, the quarterback, the franchise, the whole future of the team apparently had a dinner with Cal McNair, the owner, and expressed his support for Eric Bieniemy to come and be the head coach of the Texans.
And then he went ahead and expressed that to management as well. And so did safety Eric Reed for the Texans. So
yeah,
that would be a great pickup.
Yeah, so that's an intriguing, if you play this game of musical chairs, you could see Bieniemy in Houston, McDaniels there in San Diego or
LA.
Los Angeles now. And then there are whispers of Harbaugh going to the Jets, which I find it sort of intriguing. Harbaugh has been good in short spurts in the NFL. But
well, in short spurts everywhere.
Right, right. He's a guy like a Bill Parcells who comes in, makes a big mark in 3 to 4 years, and then sort of wears out his welcome.
100%. And I think, really, Michigan, University of Michigan loves him. He's one of their own. He was their quarterback. So they brought him in, and he's great PR, a great hire for them. But the Michigan job, you are hired to beat Ohio State. And we talked about this earlier when we were talking about college football. And he's 0-4 in his first 4 years. He has another year in his contract. But Michigan loves their guy. And so I think they're in no position that they're going to say, okay, we're done. Michigan's having a terrible season this year, absolutely terrible. And they did COVID themselves out of a matchup with Ohio State so that he won't be completely 0-5 in his tenure
right,
if he stays.
Right.
But I think they're going to allow Jim Harbaugh, they respect him and like him so much that they're going to craft your own way out.
Right.
Whether it's to the NFL and you just, yay, congratulations, or if you're going to stay another year. I think Michigan is, they're going to let him make that decision. And he does do well in the NFL. He does translate to that level very well. Look what he did. Well, first of all, he turned around a Stanford football program that was terrible. Then he went to the 49ers, did the same, took them to the Super Bowl under Colin Kaepernick, lost to his brother. I think he could do great things with the Jets. He has not had a good run at Michigan. I mean, he's had a good run as far as decent seasons. This season is really moribund.
I mean, one of the more outlandish rumors out there, Boomer Esiason on his radio show
said about Bill Cowher.
Yeah, he said Bill Cowher might have an interest in returning the coaching. Now, it's been 15 years for Cowher.
I know. I loved him with the Steelers.
But that the Jets' opportunity would be one that would turn his head. Obviously, they'd have a franchise quarterback in Trevor Lawrence and a whole bunch of other picks. Do you really think Cowher's still got it? He's age 63. How long was Gruden out? I mean, it was a good long run. It was
He was out a long time.
Over 10 years.
But he's much younger than Cowher.
That's right.
But then you're looking at Bill Belichick at 69 years old and has no no even whispers of not wanting to coach.
Right, so Cowher's 63. But I guess one difference, of course, is Cowher's 63 having been out of football for 15 years.
Yep.
I mean, that combination is tough. Gruden was out for probably over 10 years. But
yeah, I think he's close to 15.
All right, he's still in, his 50s. And by all accounts, Gruden was still very much
a student of the game. Yes.
Talking to people, looking at the way offenses were evolving. And offenses,
his quarterback school that
they
he would
have
do.
Evolved, right. Yeah. He had his head in the game. That's very different than what at least we perceive of Cowher. It's so easy for him, Bill Cowher, to go in and talk at a high level about what's taking place. But you don't sense that he's diving deeply into the way people are using RPOs and changing offensive schemes.
Modern day
football. Now, he might be able to build a staff around that, and then he's sort of that managerial CEO of a franchise. But I don't know. Why would you pay him to do that when it just seems that
there are other good candidates out there? Well, because he's proven. I will say that.
No
Bill
doubt.
Cowher is proven.
And a leader and a motivator of men. There are a lot of dimensions about him.
There are. And he's so likable. He's so great. My bigger question is, how in the world is Adam Gase still on the roster with the New York Jets? I mean, Greg Williams, we saw him gone.
Right.
And rightfully so. That play call, that zero coverage was the nail in the coffin. And he was fired by Adam Gase. I'm sorry. I kind of think that's funny.
Well, for Adam Gase to be firing anybody right now when his head's on the firing line as well. However,
oh my goodness.
The Jets keeping Adam Gase may be the smartest thing they can do. Their fate
to keep
depends upon the top pick in the NFL draft. And
the Jaguars
are hovering around one game difference, and they almost blew it against the Raiders.
Yeah, they did.
So I think keeping Adam Gase, it's
sort
of shrewd.
The Jets almost blew it, not the Raiders almost blew it.
Right.
The Jets almost blew it, which is so Jetsy.
It is very, very Jetsy.
Oh,
and so I think they've got the right guy for the job with the New York Jets right now.
It's a good point. I'll give you that.
Greg Williams gone. That coverage that he had there just struck me. One, of course, to send everybody when it clearly has to be a deep route, to send everybody on a blitz, foolhardy. And then the second thing, the cornerback.
You had one job, dot, dot, dot.
Don't let the guy get behind you. Don't let Ruggs get behind you.
And his name is Lamar Jackson. He's supposed to be a speedy.
And Lamar Jackson let him get behind him. I mean, that's just an amazing. He bit on the cut. You don't bite on the cut when it's a Hail Mary down the sidelines. Anyway, just amazing. It did seem almost like the Jets wanted to lose that game. And certainly there are parts of the Jets fan base who were delighted when Ruggs came down with that catch.
For sure.
An amazing turn of events. All right, Indy at Las Vegas. This turns into be a big game this week because both teams down the stretch here vying for a wild card spot. Colts are a pretty strong team. Raiders have had some ups and downs the last few weeks. I mean, the crazy thing about the Raiders is, well, the Falcons and the Jets outscored the Raiders in the last couple of weeks. And then the Raiders have been so good against the Chiefs. And when Raiders are playing well, they really have a great running game, and Derek Carr can throw play action. They've got lots of pieces. I mean, what's going to happen with the Raiders and Colts this week?
Well, it's going to really depend, to me, on the health of Josh Jacobs.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been out.
They need him.
They didn't have him last week against the Jets. So the run game is obviously incredibly different. He's a touchdown machine for Oakland and gives their offense so much diversity. But he was at practice yesterday, limited participation. They're going to see what he looks like today on a lot of rest. So I think really the game for Las Vegas is going to depend on that. And if he's not a go, they're going to have to find a way to beat Indy. And I think that way is that defense getting to Phillip Rivers, because they were a Nick Martin terrible snap away from getting beat by the lowly Texans. And I'm sorry, the Texans are pretty lowly right now.
Yep.
They've got some great pieces, but as a team, yikes. So I think there are some cracks in the armor for sure in Indy. And I feel the same way about Indy as I feel about Tennessee. I want to make Phillip Rivers beat me. I want to make Ryan Tannehill beat me. Like, go ahead. Derrick Henry's going to get his stuff. T.Y. Hilton's going to get his catches. Make Phillip Rivers beat you.
Yeah, you're not sold on those two quarterbacks.
No, I'm not. I'm not with either. I think they're doing great in the schemes and the systems that they're in, but I do think they the AFC South, these two are beating themselves up, you know, one after the other in the AFC South. So I think the Raiders, if they can get to Phillip Rivers, that's their best chance, and the hopes that Josh Jacobs comes back for Las Vegas.
Okay, one of the games I'm most looking forward to this weekend is Baltimore at Cleveland.
Ooh, that's going to be good.
I mean, everyone's jumping back on the Cleveland Browns bandwagon.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, Baker Mayfield, who's been up and down. There was good Baker last week. He showed up. He completed 76% of his passes on 33 throws. He was outstanding. I mean, Kevin Stefanski deserves a ton of credit for the way they schemed last week in their win over the Titans. But you seem to lack a little faith in Baker Mayfield and how far Cleveland will go.
I do. I think, listen, he had a great game last week, and more specifically, he had a great first half of football. He was serviceable in the second half.
Yep.
To me, he is an average quarterback. Like, he is an average quarterback overall body of work. He has his flashes. Because I want to look at, you look at Cleveland's record at 9-3, and you're like, wow, Super Bowl, they're going to the Super Bowl, this is all great.
And remember, this is Cleveland at 9-3. That's what makes it so unbelievable,
it
right?
It is unbelievable.
Yes.
And you look, and they have what they have done in place with Andrew Berry. Well, it started with John Dorsey, but Andrew Berry finally getting the coach right after Jackson Kitchens and now Kevin Stefanski. But I want to point out where the 9 wins came from
with
the Browns.
Wait, don't pop the balloon. Are you going
I'm sorry. Get the pen out.
Okay.
Two wins over the Bengals. A second week win over the Washington football team at that point without Alex Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Your Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
The Houston Texans.
Mm.
Barely a win. The Philadelphia Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes. The Jacksonville Jaguars. And the only two wins that, to me, are solid and above, you know, 500 teams is a win over Indy and a win over Tennessee. And those two teams have been very streaky. They win one week, they get clobbered the next. Their losses are also telling to Baltimore, to Pittsburgh, and to Las Vegas.
Yep.
And Las Vegas has taken down New Orleans on Monday Night Football. They've taken down Kansas City, almost took them down twice, and the Cleveland Browns. So I look at that record, and that doesn't give me
a lot
of hype if I'm a Browns fan. I mean, hey, the wins are wins. 9-3 is real. But here we go.
Right.
Look at the competition.
Well, they're going to face a really good matchup, a really tough competitor against the Ravens this week. I mean, the one thing, the Ravens defense has been vulnerable to the run. Cleveland will want to hand the ball off to Chubb and Hunt all day long. And if they can establish a running game, look out. I tell you what, the return of Myles Garrett last week against the Titans was huge. You could just feel a difference on that Browns defense. And he made a big difference against the Titans. He'll be a big
difference.
He's the
number one pick, and he plays like it.
The athleticism of Myles Garrett matches up well with Lamar Jackson. I mean, he can really be a catalyst to helping to stop and disrupt Lamar Jackson. I mean, one of the things that we've been seeing that defenses will do against Lamar Jackson is almost form a web. Not come after him all in to go get a sack, but create a web that reduces his running zones and sort of corrals
contains him,
and then forces him to throw the ball.
Sure.
And he's not the same passer that he is a runner. And certainly the Browns have seen that, and they were going to try to replicate that, I'm sure, against the Ravens this week.
And it's kind of interesting to note that, you know, with OBJ going down with the ACL injury several weeks ago, Jarvis Landry's looking good. The passing game's looking a lot better. Wow.
Well, when you talk Browns, you do have to give a lot of credit to Kevin Stefanski.
Yes.
And it is interesting. There's almost a week-by-week analysis of who deserves to be coach of the year. As of this week, Kevin Stefanski's on that short list because, of course, the Browns are 9-3, and they had a good win last week over the Titans. So coach of the year candidates right now, Stefanski is in that top three or four names.
Definitely.
Who do you like in that list right now? Subject to change because it is a week-to-week league.
You know, I still like Mike Tomlin.
Love Mike Tomlin. I got to add Sean Payton after what he's done with the loss of Drew Brees.
Oh, and I think he's very under the radar, and he shouldn't be. I totally agree with you. I'm going to actually put him at the top. I like it.
All right, when we come back, we're going to wrap up with our picks for the MVP candidates at this moment in time. You're listening to The Boss on the Gloss on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to Football Friday with the Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Blue Emu and Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
All right, I always love the way the media tries to pick the MVP of the league after like two games, right? They do it right away. But we are now.
It's got to be Baker Mayfield, right?
Well, not, maybe not. We're now late in the season here, and I think a lot of names have been eliminated. I'm going to take out Russell Wilson and Derrick Henry from consideration. They were hot names earlier in the year. I don't see that happening. Russell Wilson, Derrick Henry off the list. Who's on the list still remaining for you to win the MVP?
I'm going to keep Dalvin Cook on the list.
Really?
He's leading the league with 424 rushing yards, six touchdowns, and leads the league in yards after contact.
Wow.
I like him. And he's helped to salvage what was not a great season.
Well, what I like about that pick is it's not the predictable pick.
That's right. I mean, it's not a QB.
I know. You could have said Patrick Mahomes. You could have said Aaron Rodgers. But that Cook's interesting. I mean, of course, he missed a chunk of games, which set him back earlier
totally.
In the year. Right.
But we're talking about value, most valuable player.
He has been valuable.
And you look at the weapons around Mahomes. I mean, Mahomes is incredible.
Yep.
But his weapons make him so. Dalvin Cook has changed the trajectory of the Minnesota Vikings by coming back and doing what he's doing.
Mm. All right.
It's a lot of value.
An unconventional pick from an unconventional woman.
Oh, we didn't get to your marriage counseling today.
Listen,
about your Cowboys.
Yeah, that's a big complicated thing. We'll get back to that another show. Listen, this hour of the Boss and the Gloss on Sports Map Radio has been presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. Thanks so much for being with us. On behalf of David and Carla, the Boss and the Gloss, Ron Culver behind the glass, we sure have enjoyed the last couple of hours, and we'll be back next Friday.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.